And we will now open our meeting back up to Dave, who is our workshop leader, and he will continue on with the process.
Starting?
Go ahead.
Now? All right. Welcome back. Apparently some others need more of a breather.
That's a good word to use.
Please understand that anything I have to say that gets you going on the inside is really more about what's going on the inside of you and has really nothing to do with me. But please note it and don't avoid it. If I say something that can't be reconciled with the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm wrong. Okay? I'll usually warn you before I say something that can't be reconciled with the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I do have opinions. And sometimes I can't control myself from not sharing those opinions. But I'll at least qualify them. So, we finished up with the... finished up the Great Obsession. And so we talked about the 20 pages that primarily focuses on the obsession of alcohol. What takes effect of the first drink goes from 23 to 43, which is the end of More About Alcoholism. And the last statement of page 43 is this: once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Period. So, is this me? Do I have no effective mental defense against the first drink? Or can I honestly look in the mirror and say, I take the first drink because, and come up with an answer that I actually feel confident in? Right? I take the first drink because of her. She won't leave. Because she came back. Right? So, except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. All right. If you're a real alcoholic, you may get away with that rare occasion of your own mental defense. You may even qualify it as your own mental defense. You've got through that one. Like God disappeared. Okay? Let's say that happens 9 out of 10 times. But what about the 10th time? And how do you know that it's not going to fail the first try out? The first thought that you come up with to defend your first drink, defend from a first drink. How do you know it's not going to happen the first time? The failure is going to happen the first time. Why would you even want to mess with that kind of responsibility, even if you thought you had the power? Certainly in 21 years, if that was the basis upon which I'm still sober, certainly I would have made a mistake in thinking about taking the first drink or not somewhere along the line. But why would I want that responsibility when the book offers a different solution? Well, there's nothing that I have to defend against. It can be removed. Right? I don't know what takes me back to the first drink. Why would I want to sit there and try and put all this effort and energy into watching myself and what I'm feeling and what I'm thinking, because I think I know what's going to take me back to the first drink, and just drive myself absolutely crazy doing it when there's another option, when I'm offered another option? I don't know what anybody else's drinking was like, except what people tell me. But I can tell you that the idea of a relapse to me is a failure in a mental defense, even one time, to 20 years ago and now is unacceptable. I do not want to ever drink again, ever. A lot of people seem to hate alcohol. How can you hate the great persuader? It beat me into a state of reasonableness. It was a great teacher. And what did it teach me? That I can't live without alcohol, without a relationship with a higher power. Period. I cannot keep up with the speed of the mental obsession. I cannot keep up with drinking when I'm not thinking about drinking. I can't keep up with that kind of baffling feature of alcoholism. And people talk about relapse today like it's no big deal. Like, oh, I'll just come back in here when it gets too bad. Like they know the line. That they can definitively tell the line when it's been too much for me and now I gotta go to God. I don't know what that, I don't have a line. When it comes to mental defense, when it comes to defects of character, reliance on self, I don't know how much of any of that it takes before I need God. I just don't. Before it takes me back to another drink of alcohol. And you know what? The book says I don't need to know. Because it can be removed. That responsibility doesn't have to weigh on my shoulders of figuring that out. If you're a real alcoholic and you drink again, that blows out any choice of you coming back. If you come back, it has nothing to do with you. If you understand that, then you understand your alcoholism. Okay? I have no say when I'm going to stop, and I have no say if I'm coming back here. Now, when people presented with me, to me when I was new, this is part of the thing that used to drive me crazy when I was new, was this one day at a time sobriety. Because what that popped up with me is, well, that's a reservation about tomorrow. Well, what about tomorrow? Well, don't worry about tomorrow. And then when I went and was in this coffee shop, pissed off and scared, saying, these people are just saying to stay sober today and don't worry about tomorrow, they say, well, no, that's not what our book says. Our book says make a commitment to stay sober forever, permanent recovery. And they're actually giving me this in the book, and they showed me that there's nowhere in the big book that talks anything about staying sober just for today. That every commitment to staying sober in the book presented is about staying sober forever, all together, for good and all. That made sense to me. What's the point in starting something that's supposedly a solution if it's just going to fail somewhere down the road? I can't afford a failure. I don't want to experience a failure. Okay? The book later on wanted to say, if I have the right attitude, I can't fail. Right attitude towards a higher power. Right? So you can mess around with that all you want to. That's your deal. But if you ask me for help, we're going to talk about making a commitment forever. That's what the book says. It doesn't say anything about I have the power to do it. But it does say that to make that commitment, to seek the power so that it can happen. Okay? So then it starts talking about being at this place. Being at this place of realizing that once I start, I can't stop. When I'm stopped, I can't stay stopped. And that driving me to the next step, which is step two, coming to believe in a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. One of the first things I need to see is that every time I took a drink, if I'm alcoholic and I knew I was, maybe I didn't know I was alcoholic, but I certainly had a self-destructive, wanting-to-die drinking problem. And every time I drank, that I have to start to consider that maybe there was a higher power restoring me to insanity every time I took the first drink. Okay? And if I'm clear about why do I have a sobriety date when I shouldn't, why is it that I'm still sober for 20 years, 5 years, 10 days, 15 days, a month, 2 years, whatever it is? Okay, why is it that I'm still sober no matter what I've thought, no matter what I've felt? When under past circumstances, I drank. Why is that happening? See, it's much easier to come to believe in a higher power restoring sanity when you start to see it's already begun, when it's already happening. We're skipping a ton in step one, but without any fear of argument, a higher power is clearly presented in the first step portion of the book in a number of occasions. We even read one about But for the Grace of God, right? The demonstrations of people that are sober. You guys. Okay? When I start getting down to the answers to these questions, the truth, and I can't say, well, because I felt this way, or it's because of this person, or I was here, I was there, I was doing this, and I was doing that. When I finally get down to the truth about those answers to those questions, is that something came between me and alcohol that separated me and has kept me separated under all circumstances. Now I can start getting to this thing about coming to believe. It's much easier to come to believe in something that's already occurring. Our book talks about being fearless and thorough from the very start. And I can tell you probably the first 5-6 times coming out of step one, and even going into step one, it came from a place of fear. That's just what I was taught. That's just what they knew. But as I began to sponsor more and more people and going through this book myself more and more, I started to realize that this program does not come from a place of fear. And it became harder and harder and harder for me to reconcile leading somebody in step one in a place of fear, ready to embark into something they're even more afraid of, and that's a higher power. So what's the solution to that? Does the book offer it? Absolutely it offers it. It encourages it. And we start talking about coming out of step one from a place of conceding to our innermost self based on the information that we already have. Once I start, I can't stop. How I stop. I'm stopped, I can't stay stopped, but I stay stopped. Why? The description is right there on page 25. It's right there in the step one position of the book. That we've had deep, effective spiritual experiences that have revolutionized our whole attitude and outlook towards life, our fellows, and God's universe. Like that. The book will talk about differentiating between the spiritual experience and the spiritual awakening in the spiritual experience appendix. Because a lot of people are getting crossed up with that. Okay, and it's easy. Okay? But every description of the spiritual experience in the book is sudden, and it always is the separator between them and alcohol. It's attached to the grace of God. It's attached to me not having to do anything for it. It's just something that happens. And then we have this thing called a spiritual awakening that happens slowly, which involves conscious contact, which involves seeking, which is, now that requires, that has conditions. And from step 2 to step 11 is all about entering into a personal relationship with that which is keeping me sober in the first place. So it's helpful, and it smashes that fear of coming to believe in the power of myself restoring insanity if I begin to see that it's already occurring in the first step. Now it's something I'm looking forward to rather than running away from. Now I may have a bunch of hooks still from ideas about God from wherever or none at all, but at least in here I can look in the mirror and say something I'm not able to do is happening, and I know I'm not pulling it off because I never have been able to before. Something's happening here, and that's enough. in conceding to our innermost self, that's where God's at. It says very plainly, right after the great fact, the central fact is that God has entered into our heart and has begun to do the miraculous. He's doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. That's in the step one position of the book. Okay? Am I willing to at least consider that? If I'm at least willing to consider that, I can come out of step one from a place exactly where this book talks about. That is from being fearless and thorough from the very start. How am I going to make a decision that God either is, a fearless decision that God either is or he isn't, if I'm still in fear? How am I going to do a fearless and thorough moral inventory if I'm still in fear? The platform of our program is not based in fear. Okay? I'm much more open to seeking something that I want to find out more about than I want to stay away from. Okay? So we're placed in this position. In obsession and craving. And we have this decision now. A decision about spiritual basis of life or not. And I have to realize that I don't have the capacity to pull off either one. You may have had the experience I had, that now you're there, you know you're there, and that, well, that's great, but God doesn't want anything to do with me, as evidenced by what I've been up to, or else he would have answered my prayers a long time ago. At least he would have answered my mom's prayers, right? She's devout. That didn't happen. Right? What do I do? But I don't want to die an alcoholic death either. And then I begin to see that if I'm a real alcoholic, that I have failed at dying an alcoholic death by God's grace. I don't have the power to pull off an alcoholic death. I've already tried 100 times. And I'm still here. You're still here. And from the 12 and 12, Bill talks about that for an alcoholic drink is an unnatural act. And what do you have people telling newcomers or relapsers when they come through the door? Oh, you did what came natural. You might as well just say, hey, just go ahead and just keep shooting that gun in your head, all right? Just go ahead and just keep pulling that trigger. That's Russian roulette. It's an unnatural act. That's what he said. It's an unnatural act for an alcoholic to drink like they do, and that it is goes against the God-given instinct of self-preservation. It is suicide. You may not identify it as suicide because you're not putting a gun to your face, but think about the people that you know that have cried more tears, shed more blood, and never got a sniff of AA, and they're 6 feet under. Why you and not them? If it was a merit system, don't you think they would have got here before you? If it was about going so far down the scale, now you qualify for AA, that they would have got here before you? But they didn't. They never even got a sniff. And we are failures at dying an alcoholic death by God's grace. I don't have the power to pull it off. You say, well, I could put a gun in my face. We knew a gentleman, Matt Green. Billy knew Matt. Who did it? And he lived the tale of the tale and became a great 12-stepper in Alcoholics Anonymous. He was in so much services, phenomenal. And he would tell you right now, if you're sitting here right now, because I sat with him 100 times, it's not your life to take. If you had the power to take it, you could. But if God wants to keep you around, he's going to keep you around. I got another friend, Nick. Everything was going great. Young guy, 19 or 20 at the time. Going great. Had a late night meeting on Friday or Saturday night. Locked it up. Went home, put a .38 to his head, and pulled the trigger. And by God's grace, he missed anything important. and live to tell the tale. He's got brain damage. He's got motor skill damage. But he's a hardcore heir. Prove to me that it's not my life to take, nor do I have the power to take it. I don't need to take it to that extreme. I believe you. But I also don't have the power to pull off a spiritual basis of life as evidence of me pounding my head up against the wall of Alcoholics Anonymous or any other spiritual way of life, even in sobriety. Let me share something with you. The Agnostics, page 44. Excuse me. Bottom of page 44. If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. And an important thing to recognize, if you don't already know, is that AA is a philosophy of how to live life, spiritually based. I mean, we got several places where this is literally described as a way of life, a design for living. You go in any Webster's dictionary and look up the word philosophy, it's going to come up with something like an idea of how life is to be lived. Okay, so now let's include AA in this paragraph, right? If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life, including AA, were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. Is that true? Just come to meetings, right? Let's talk about the big pink elephant that nobody ever wants to talk about, AA meetings. And I love AA meetings. Most people just come to AA meetings will not stay sober permanently. If that's all they do is just come to AA meetings. If you go to a meeting consistently, on a regular basis, and you pay attention to the revolving door, you're going to be shocked if you haven't noticed it already. Okay? But we found that such codes and philosophies, including AA, did not save us no matter how much we tried. This is the rub. No matter how much I try, right? I mean, I can bring all that I am. I can bring all this effort. I can bring all this desire. I can bring all this willingness. I can bring it all to the table, to the spiritual basis of life, and it may not mean anything. We could wish to be moral. We could wish to be philosophically comforted. Go to AA, because it's my filling station, right? Get filled up and feel better and go out the door, right? I'm now comforted by my little AA meeting, right? My sponsor gave me the kudos. They patted me on the head. I did sponsor Eve. In fact, we could will these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there. Our human resources, which is everything I am minus God, body, mind, and emotion, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. They're all around you in every room that you sit in Alcoholics Anonymous. They're all around you. But you wouldn't know it because they might be in a place like I was in 5 years, 7 years, hiding behind a bunch of knowledge and lingo, jargon that's easily recitable in the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. You wouldn't know it. Hiding behind years of sobriety, what they think they know. Been there. Done that. If it was true that I could just come here and just bring all this stuff to AA, go to my meetings, then the wheels wouldn't have fell off at 5 years. The wheels wouldn't have fell off at 9 years because I was doing all that. Is it possible that I was self-willing a spiritual program? I cannot pull off a spiritual basis of life on my power. So when we come to this, so the next thing is lack of power is the problem. Obviously. This is where step one pretty much closes out in the book. Is it obvious that lack of power is my problem? Power is the solution. And if I seek a relationship with that power, everything else will take care of itself. Okay. Am I convinced of that? And if I'm convinced that no matter what I bring to the spiritual basis of life, that all it's going to do is short-circuit an opportunity to have a real personal relationship with this higher power that has come between me and alcohol, right? Am I convinced of that? Then I can come to the feet of this higher power that gave me sobriety in the first place and say, what do you got in store, and actually look forward to it. but we got to get a few things out of the way. The book will talk about things that we avoided, things that we ignored, things that we doubt, things that we feel are inadequate, things that we have decided about God and religion that we feel have separated us from any opportunity at a spiritual basis of life. And the short story on all that? See, we turn statements into questions. We're still going to do that. What we're going to find out, and this is true for the atheist as well, that everything that has been fed into here about a spiritual basis of life has come from an external source. And most of us have never, ever been given the opportunity to look inside for a power greater than ourselves, because we have been inundated, impressed upon as children, in AA, as adults, somewhere else, with what God is and what spiritual living is and what it isn't. It's all external. Every person I've ever sponsored, when we go through this, it's all external. It's this building, that book, that figurehead, whatever it was, it, east, west, north, south, above, below, it doesn't really matter. Is it so? What does the book say? We get that out. It says, are we willing to lay it aside? We ask God to lay it aside. It doesn't say to cast it out. It doesn't say to disregard it. Let's just set aside all that external BS that's blocking me off from having a relationship with that which I'm conceding to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic. Okay? Now I have a clean slate of laying aside. And then the book talks about thinking honestly what God means to you. Spiritual terms. It references spiritual terms in the book. Okay? It's asking you to take notice of the spiritual terms in the book. Those are the ones that are capitalized. All the different terms for God that are capitalized. And asking yourself, not yourself like self-knowledge self, the same innermost self that you conceded to that you're an alcoholic. What does that honestly mean to me? What does creative intelligence as a higher power honestly mean to me? What does it mean that God has infinite love and power? What does it mean that God is guiding, a father? There's so many terms, right? There's like 35, 36 terms in the book for God that are capitalized. It says that once I do this, find out what these terms honestly mean to me, and I'll read it to you. Very short. I'm on page 47. When therefore we speak to you of God, we mean your own conception of God. This applies too to other spiritual expressions which you find in this book. Do not let any prejudice you may have against spiritual terms deter you from honestly asking yourself what they mean to you. Listen to this very closely. At the start, this was all we needed to commence spiritual growth to affect our first conscious relation with God as we understood Him. You don't have to wait till step 3. You don't have to wait till you're done with your inventory. You don't have to wait till step 7. You don't have to wait till step 11. Our book very clearly states, if you follow through with these directions, your conscious relation can be established here in step 2. This is consistent. Because why would I turn my will and my life for the care of God if it hadn't already been established in the first place? Why would I ask God to remove my resentments if there's nothing established in the first place? Why would I ask God to remove my fear and direct my attention to what He'd have me be if it wasn't established in the first place? Why would I ask God for a sex ideal for my future life, future sex life, if I didn't think that relationship was established in the first place? It may not be strong. I may not have a lot of faith in it, but at least it's established. At least I can go to it with some kind of confidence in it working. If it's not here, and I have to wait till step 7, then what's that say about all the previous prayers, that they're null and void? What kind of confidence can I have in actually making those prayers and receiving any kind of legitimate answer? What if I got to wait till, according to my sponsor, or I have to wait till step 11? Now I'm really in the dark for a long time. focusing can be established now in step two. And all that needs to be established off of this exercise, am I willing to believe that is enough to establish this cornerstone on the foundation of step one to proceed into step three? The rest of the we agnostics, if we're at this point and we're willing to say, yeah, I'm willing to believe that there is, doesn't say in, that there is, doesn't even ask you to commit to in, that there is. Put it right there. We need to ask ourselves one short question, do I not believe or am I willing to believe that there is a power greater than myself? As soon as a man says that he does believe or is willing to believe, he emphatically assures him that he is on his way. Anybody that says otherwise to you is pushing their own agnosticism on you because they don't believe. And don't let your spiritual growth be determined by somebody else's agnosticism. Your life's in the balance here. It may not be in the balance for them, but it certainly is for you. There's a very interesting statement about in step five about not letting the other person change your plan. What's the plan here? The plan here is to have a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps so that we can help other alcoholics and also not ever drink again, by the way. Okay? So don't let anybody change your plan because they're trying to short-circuit a real solution. The real solution, do I now believe or am I willing to believe that there is? From that place we can start. And then the book is going to take in We Agnostics, step two portion of the book is going to move through there and work you through some other prejudices that we may have around religion, God of reason, you know, relying on our own mind. And it'll start to talk about this thing on page 51. It says that, leaving aside the drink question, they tell why life was so unsatisfactory. Now we're talking about unmanageability, the insanity. Okay? And this is a build-up to what is later in the next paragraph called the Bedevilments paragraph on page 52. We had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply our human problems to the same readiness to change our point of view. We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Check, 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 check. If you have the bedevilments, you don't have the promises. It's pretty cut and dry. Okay? Leaving aside the dream question, why does my life look like this? I don't want to look like that. I want to be a better person. I want to have better relationships. I don't want to live in misery and depression. I don't want to be unhappy. I want to be useful to my fellows and my family and everybody else. I want to be about happy about where I work, but everything I'm doing isn't working. And then it's going to talk about the solution of that. When we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did. And I have to start, have my ideas worked? Drunk or sober, no matter how right my motives are, no matter how much I want it, have my ideas resulted in real solutions in the troubles I'm having in all of my affairs, inwardly and outwardly? Because the internal problems, the internal bedevilments, like misery and depression, feelings of fear, all that other stuff, I'm just pushing that out onto you. And that's what's causing the troubles with my personal relationships. And have my ideas been a solution, a real, viable solution to any of that? And what that it hasn't done for me, it might bring me some relief, but I'm a real alcoholic who suffers from a spiritual malady. And my relief gets shorter and shorter and shorter. My toper's broken, my reliever's broken. Right? It has to be what this book talks about. A removal. Okay? And I can't do that on my power, on my ideas. So am I willing to be open to God's idea? And we do this as an exercise, verbal or written. God, what is your solution to the trouble with my personal relationship with my son's mother, my son, my mom, my dad, guys I sponsor, my home group, my work? God, what is your solution to my misery and depression? My feelings of uselessness, unhappy. I found that people that are new have a much easier time with this exercise than people that have been around a while. And I found that people that don't want to take a look at this sober is because they don't want to tell on themselves. They still want to enjoy a reputation they don't deserve sober, present company included. But if we keep up with this facade, we'll drink again or blow our brains out. I was talking about this in a big book study years and years ago. We're going over the bedevilments a lot more intensely than we are now. And a guy that doesn't normally come to that meeting came to that meeting, brought somebody else who he thought needed it. Okay. And I got done talking about this bedevilments, and I look over here because I hear some weird noises, and he's hyperventilating. He's having a visceral reaction to where his life was at in regards to these bedevilments. And he had a lot more sobriety time than me. I mean, he's somebody that I would have considered asking for to be my sponsor years ago, when I was new. And he's a really great guy. But he was suffering from these bedevilments and sobriety, and he hadn't done the work in about 16 years. That's going to happen. Scout's honor. Been there, done it. Okay.
Hey,
yes, sir.
I've experienced something that I think is connected to what you're talking about. You get sober for a couple of years, and you get this notion that you have a responsibility as a new person to represent that your life is fixed, right? That you don't have frailties, that you don't have shortcomings, right? And that's a short fuse waiting to blow up.
Oh yeah.
And on the other side of it, I do have a responsibility to the person who's new to let them know that this way of life that I've found is such a dramatic improvement over where I came from. And so there's kind of two sided sword, right? You know, I don't want to come to a meeting that somebody with a little bit of time behind my belt and sound like a little crybaby that can't get anything together and all blows me and all the problems I have in my life. So it can be a real challenge to communicate that in an effective way, right?
Right.
To say, yeah, guess what, man? None of us is ever going to get fixed. But don't miss the point that man, my problems are so much less painful than they used to be.
Right. I felt in the first 5-6 years of sponsoring, I felt it was my responsibility to, it's so stupid now, but to put out this persona of perfection, right? It's like, if you pray the fear prayer, then you have no more fear, right? If you pray the anger prayer, you're not angry anymore, right? But even the slowest of slow, no, that's not true. And then even though, and those that still don't figure it out, what they have figured out is, how'd you get that? How can you get that way? Right? It doesn't look real, you know. And it wasn't until I started being willing to undo myself in front of my peers, is when it seemed more people were asking me for help. And I have no problems. I have no problems proving that I have feet of clay in AA anymore. I've found that none of that stuff endears me to newcomers. That this is where I'm at. This is what's going on. So I completely get that.
It's a common trap, though, isn't it?
It's an easy trap.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so then we come to this question after all this, which is a little bit tougher, on page 53, that when we became alcoholics crushed by a self-imposed crisis we could not postpone or evade, we had to fearlessly face the proposition that God is either everything or else he's nothing, God either is or he isn't. What was our choice to be? Be clear that you do not have to make the decision here. It's posed here. He'll even tell you right in the next, I'm not going to read it all, but I'm just telling you, the decision about this question doesn't have to be made until the second step prayer on page 59. What? There's a second step prayer? Okay. So, but the rest of the book is going to make a case for you to help determine for yourself about what it is that you've been relying on. And it's going to get right down to a worship of people, money, things, sentiment, and ourselves. Ultimately, it's always ourselves. And that it's not a matter of no faith or no reliance, but that it's just a matter of reliance in the wrong things, of faith in the wrong things. Okay? A healthy discussion with your sponsor about your benevolence, about your alcoholism, craving, obsession, all that, will give this a reality that is undeniable. That you have been, that I have been living a life that is reliant on my ideas and not God's. And over time, like Bill was talking about, and again, time is relative to everybody, it's different. It always seems to me, it always seems to be about 9 months or a year, where at some point I get off the reliance of God's idea and get back onto the reliance of my ideas. And however long the success of that lasts will determine when I actually get back to doing the steps again. And that's when I'm most thankful, because I realize at any time in there I easily could have drank. Right? And once I get onto relying on my ideas, in all practical application, I become an atheist. Okay? I may not describe myself as such, but I am. Because there is no God. I am God. My ideas are God at that point. God's ideas don't even matter. Okay? I'm running the show now. Alright? Because God isn't doing it my way, in my time. I'm not feeling the way I should. Da-da-da-da-da. Okay? So I'm going to improve what God has gotten started in, by taking over the reins. Okay? But like the book said, that doesn't work. Okay? So the second step prayer is on page 59, right before the steps, outlined. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. That's the prayer. Now I'm going to make this decision about God is either everything or nothing before going into the rest of the steps. Okay? Half measure to fail is nothing. What's that talking about? Some of you may use that to guilt your sponsees into doing the work, right? But if you have a sharp sponsee that's paying attention to what the book says, they're going to come right back at you and say, well, my book says, and then I accept that before I'm halfway through my amends, I'm going to be amazed. And I'm going to get all these promises. And you're caught sponsoring out of your ego, giving misinformation. This is the problem with taking stuff out in the book out of context. Okay? When we come out of step one, we realize our back is to God. Entering into a relationship with God through the rest of these steps is about turning. and facing and entering into your life. It's just like making a friend. You ever introduce yourself with your back to the person you want to meet? Right? Okay, so this process of entering into a relationship with God, most of these terms are right in the book, right here in We Agnostics. Okay? We seek, and once we seek, right? Look. Once we think we see what we're looking for, we approach, we contact, we relate. Hey, I want to get to know you. Right? What are you about? We relate. Okay? Then we want, the book says, we're seeking access. Access to this power. So that we can see, feel, direct, and use it. Consciousness. For a conscious contact with God. Conscious contact with God, relationship with God, a spiritual awakening is conditional. And the condition is that we seek. That's it. But it is conditional. Grace of God is not. Conscious contact is conditional. That's not me talking. That's right there in the book. It's very clear. And that's okay if you don't want to seek, if you continue to get away with grace. But once you see the truth, you may realize that you can't just get away with grace anymore. You can't just keep your back to God anymore. You may have to turn around and actually approach, contact, relate, access for power that can see, feel, direct, and use. So you can have consciousness. Okay? We ask this protection and care with protection and care with complete abandon. Why do I got to do that? Just going through the steps looking for a spiritual awakening. Why would I have to do that? Okay? I think anybody that's made any serious attempt at these steps will find out that once you get in here to these action steps of 4 through 11, things are going to come up that are going to want to knock you off the path permanently. Trust me, there are plenty of times writing an inventory where I've just said, screw this. Another time, another day. And that's right where the spiritual malady wants me. Okay? 8-step list. I'll rest on my laurels. I'm camping out. You know? It's okay. It's good enough. Alright? And so the rest, step 3 almost becomes a no-brainer if I've clearly experienced step 2. All it's asking me to do is to make a decision to take me a step further in my relationship with God and enter into a relationship. Okay? To make a commitment. And the decision is this. Not either or. The prayer is not the decision. The prayer is the commitment to the decision. Okay? It's like signing the dotted line. Right? And that I'm going to enter into a relationship with God that is father, child, actor, director, principal, agent. It's not either or. It's all three. Okay? That's what it's going to ask me to do. In order to convince me of that, it's going to ask me to take a look at how I've lived my life up until this point. That my life is a life that's been rooted in selfishness and self-centeredness. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. And that I must be rid of selfishness or it'll kill me and I can't do it on my power. And that I must have my self-centeredness reduced or it'll kill me and I can't do it on my own power. That working on my selfishness and working on my self-centeredness is just going to make it stronger. It's combating self-will with self-will. It's nuts. The idea that because I'm now sober, I can now handle selfishness and self-centeredness, which is the root of my problem, is a bigger statement of my own insanity than thinking I can stop the symptom, which is the booze. I couldn't even stop the symptom, but now that I'm sober, I think I'm qualified to work on my selfishness and self-centeredness and uproot it? That's preposterous. It's insane. and it will take me out of here with or without booze.
Yep.
We're going to break.
Okay.